This is the naked city, the city within the city, like an ugly wound, laid raw. The naked city.
It's time for another rambunctious, mind-popping, heart-stopping, lobe-lopping, huge and whopping edition of The Naked City, of course, brought to you by Sydney Film School. Challenge the status quo, people. SydneyFilmSchool.com. Now join us for the next riveting 2 hours as we plunge headlong into a cornucopia of subterranea. You know there are millions of stories in this naked city, but today we've only got time for a few of them. And now your hosts, Miss Death, Coffin Ed, and of course myself, if I don't have a little heart attack here, J-Cats.
Good morning to the beautiful people of Sydney and all the readers of this Sydney Morning Herald, which I guess must be well over 50 years of age, because no one in the infrastructure of this station knew we were even in the Herald. Miss Death, how are you?
I'm very disheveled this morning, but hair's all over the place.
You look ravishing. I love that whole idea of being disheveled.
Yes,
you know?
I've got bed hair at the moment.
You've always looked disheveled, or at least yes, for the last 15 years. How are you?
I've had a bad week.
Oh, don't be silly.
My computer blew up.
Yeah.
My coffee machine blew up.
Yeah.
Sometimes during the course of this program, I'm going to implode.
Oh, really? You're going to blow up as well? Well, look, you shouldn't worry about such trivial things as a computer and a coffee machine. Sydney has been given back to the people. The fences are gone, the alloy's down, the tasers have had the batteries removed out of them, and we should all be living the good life.
Have the powers, the laws been changed?
We're yet to test those, and Coffin Ed's going to do that this afternoon in a practical demonstration for all the listeners on FBI, aren't you?
Well, I think the aftertaste remains from APEC, and it's nasty.
Well, listen, where is the blowback? Where is the backwash to this? You were telling me that after such heinous crimes were committed on taxpayers' monies that there was going to be an incredible backwash to this, and
backlash.
I've heard nothing. I've heard nothing.
Well, there was a kind of endorsement of people's anger, I think, by the fact that 3 million tuned into The Chaser on Wednesday night.
3 million?
And what, to be entertained?
The biggest ratings the Big ABC's deal. Had since Mr. Squiggle signed off.
Oh, really?
And look, really, that is people...
And now Channel 9's considering buying the program, are they?
That is people voting with their remote controls, don't you think? Most of those people that tuned in, a few would have tuned in out of curiosity, but most tuning in, it's really an endorsement of what the Chaser did, and the Australians have always hated authoritarianism and jackbootism.
Well, and they've also been larrikins.
So how come they voted Howard in?
This is a larrikin culture. It was a very bad day the day they did that. Yeah. They were just off
several
the deep
times. End. Yeah, but they've done it several times. How many times did it take them for them to learn?
But look, the difference here is our comprehension and perception of that incident that occurred with the Chaser. What was we were led to believe after watching the program was a totally different thing. I mean, they gave themselves up. I thought they actually rolled into the driveway of where Bush was, but they didn't even get there.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a pretty innocent
Ten metres within the front of the Intercontinental Hotel.
How could you condemn those gentlemen? I think they're actually doing something that's very important. They're upholding the standard of questioning what's going on around us. I mean, it was just the problem with the security services,
well,
basically.
That's what other motorcade
have people running alongside of it, you know? Literally with handy cams, you know?
This is what it highlighted. It highlighted that those millions and millions of dollars on security was all for naught. That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
Bottom line.
The other thing that troubled me was the appalling media coverage of APEC, which basically just focused on Howard and Bush, a little bit on the Chinese Prime Minister with those pandas at the Adelaide Zoo. But the rest of the people that came,
There were other people?
There were other people here.
The only reason they looked at Putin was hoping that he'd take his shirt off.
That's right. Now, look, the Daily Telegraph actually ran an editorial or a front page after APEC saying, Sydney, you've done it again. You know, they referred to the Olympic Games where the focus of the world was on Sydney. But, you know, apart from the Chaser incident, nothing got reported overseas. That was the irony of it. And as for showing off the city,
about us.
I mean, come on now.
Yeah, showing off the city in lockdown. It showed off the city, but it didn't show off the people of Sydney
like
that actually
Starlark
paid
17.
For this city to be here.
It you looked know, like Starlark 17.
To me,
that's
the most offensive thing was to be told that we weren't allowed to go into the city to view the fireworks.
Oh,
they were
right.
really played down as there were just going to be a couple of, you know, flower pots and a Catherine wheel. And they turned out to be the entire length of the harbour foreshore. Looked like hundreds to millions of dollars had been spent on them. And, you know, I watched them from my balcony in Annandale with the Anton the cat. And the poor cat was in a state of shock. He thought World War III had landed. And I thought, how dreadful is this? That actually there's 21 delegates down there, about 10,000 PAs, and they're witnessing these fireworks.
No, they weren't witnessing them. They were all
in the brothels.
In the brothels, yeah.
Well, apparently APEC people and police went around telling tourists at Circular Quay that if they watched the fireworks, they'd be blinded. They'd turn into a pillar of salt.
Oh, really?
And I believe a couple of young kiddies, 4 and 5, were actually arrested for watching them.
Oh, okay.
Still out at the Minda Detention Centre as we speak.
But they're not at the Saltex Salt Factory, are they?
It could be,
good Lord.
Sick all over?
The Naked City.
The Naked City.
Well, how would you feel?
You say, what is it? Well, it's The Naked City, of course, sponsored by Sydney Film School. Come on, challenge the status quo, people. SydneyFilmSchool.com.
The world's gone mad.
Well, it certainly has,
it
hasn't
has again. It always does.
Can I just adjunct this news quickly? I don't know if you actually went to news.com.au during the week, but directly after September 11th, on September 12th, they were quoting Fidel Castro as saying that he now believes, after 6 years of research, that September 11th was a false flag event.
Thank you. All right, let's move on. He says he saved $5. A man trying to enter a rock concert at a fair impaled his thigh on a wrought iron fence and underwent surgery to have a 2-foot section of fence removed from his leg.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Hang yourself. A coroner has called for insult chat rooms to be banned after a man took his own life while being watched by others on a webcam. Mm. Now, lots of bad things are happening on webcams.
That's Skyping. Actually, I had a good thing happen this week on webcam. We went to Newcastle upon Tyne. They did a screening of our doco.
Yes, they did.
Were you on a webcam, were you?
Yeah,
5 a.m. in the morning yesterday.
God.
To a huge audience in London.
I hope you didn't
England.
Take off your clothes, did you?
No, there was
no,
none of
way.
That.
Why? What was that about? This was to an audience. Behave yourself. Keep going, mister.
All right. Are you going to interrupt me every
story?
No, I love
you. I can't interrupt you.
I know
you,
that, yeah. But yeah, you do. You do.
Yeah.
Larry Flint is happy to help. Flint said his objective is to expose the hypocrisy of politicians who espouse conservative values in public while carrying on extramarital affairs in their private lives.
Mm. That's the editor of Hustler saying that. People in
That's
glass
right.
houses
shouldn't throw stones.
No.
It is not.
Oh, my God, there he goes now. They've shot him for the second time.
It is not
our wheelchair.
That's right. It is not a question of muckraking and exposing the perverts. It's more than that, Flint said. It is trying to maintain some honesty in the government.
Mm.
So he's the watchdog.
Exposing
he's watching. Yeah, that's right.
The unfortunate thing is that I doubt that sexuality is what needs to be exposed. But anyway.
Well, what he's doing is exposing their hypocrisy. They're talking about family values and whatnot, and then they're running around with
other people.
3-day waiting period for mushrooms. A new proposal from the mayor of Amsterdam is sure to be considered a bummer by certain visitors to the Dutch city. A 3-day waiting period to buy hallucinogenic mushrooms has been announced.
Do you have to go through, like, you write out, like...
I don't know, you must fill out a form
and
show them that you haven't got some sort of record or something. I don't know.
You know, able to get these mushrooms.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Father of all bombs. Russia has tested the world's most powerful vacuum bomb, which unleashes a destructive shockwave with the power of a nuclear blast, but which it says is much more environmentally friendly.
Oh, yeah, it just takes all the oxygen out of the air
and
kills
everyone. Yeah. So,
did you see a photo of it in the paper? It's got a very nice retro
look. Yes,
it
has. But how can he have been here you know, a week ago.
In his Speedos.
In whatever. And, you know, talking about, I don't know, what do they discuss?
World APEC. Peace.
Well, no, they don't discuss world peace. That's not what they do.
It's so contradictory.
They discuss business and how to take the bucks out of our pockets and into theirs. Mm. That's what they discuss. And then he goes home. You know, he's bought a whole bunch of uranium and stuff, and then he goes home and drops the mother of all bombs.
He's trying to tell us something,
He's
obviously.
Environmentally aware, but what about humanely? It's going to kill people. Mm. Doesn't anybody find this totally bizarre? Okay, so here's the other Russian story. Russian province gets set for Conception Day. We've already sunk to the level where the governor is ordering us on what day to conceive a child and on what day to give birth, the paper quoted local human rights activist Alexander Bragin as saying. A Russian province is readying for Family Contact Day, unofficially being called Conception Day, in an effort to boost flagging birth rates, officials said on Monday. The special day for encouraging procreation was dreamt up by the governor of Ilyanovsk province, Sergei Morozov, who this year awarded prizes ranging from a television to a Russian-made all-terrain vehicle for giving birth on Russia's Constitution Day on June the 12th. Inmates give up game consoles. Powerful computer game consoles have been banned from jails over fears they could be used to plan terror attacks.
Oh, yeah.
Top brass barred the Xbox 360, PlayStation 3 and the Nintendo DS systems after discovering they contained software that enables users to send or receive radio signals. So do they think only the people in jails are going to maybe do terrorist attacks? What about people outside of jail who have got more access to doing things? I mean, how ridiculous. The world is going absolutely insane. And let's do our this week in 1927, legendary dancer Isadora Duncan is killed in Nice, France, where her long scarf gets tangled in the rear wheel of the convertible she's riding in. Her neck is broken and an artery severed.
She must have actually been reincarnated as Jane Mansfield.
She must have been. Some accounts have her thrown against the pavement and dragged for 100 feet. The freak accident occurs in full view of a number of friends. This week in 1956, surgeons Walter Freeman and Egas Moniz perform America's first prefrontal lobotomy on a depressed 63-year-old Kansas woman in Washington, D.C. They successfully create a lethargic dullard, and the duo hails the result for years to come as a medical triumph, despite the fact that two of their next 20 lobotomy subjects ends in fatalities. Mm. This week in 1966, NBC television premieres The Monkees, a sitcom about four guys in a rock band. When the show becomes a hit, the fictional Monkees somehow release a string of albums, even though three of the actors can't even play their instruments. Well, that's where we've gone today, isn't it? Mm. Keep moving right along. This week in 1982, Grace Kelly, American-born Princess of Monaco, dies after a high-speed car crash the previous day. She and daughter Princess Stephanie were badly injured when their British Rover 3500 plunged into a ravine, tumbling 45 feet. In the official version, the events, Grace suffered a mild stroke while driving. However, rumours persist that 17-year-old Princess Stephanie was actually behind the wheel. And this week in 1966, Death Row Records rap artist Tupac Shakur dies in Las Vegas from gunshot wounds inflicted during a drive-by. The rapper was shot four times by persons unknown, leaving him in a coma for 6 days. Tupac had recently spent 8 months in prison for sexual assault. Dead people. Yeah, blah, blah, blah.
Both
Let's
those
not go
deaths
there. Yeah, I know,
mean a lot more investigation.
Yeah, of course they do.
The chances of meeting a dinosaur in today's world are very slim.
The Naked City.
This monster is venereal disease.
Wake up, humanity. Don't you know where you are? You're walking the streets of the Naked City, and we're proudly brought to you by Sydney Film School, a community of artist filmmakers and a production house for high-quality films and documentaries. Get your creative rushes now. SydneyFilmSchool.com.
Now, we're going to this the rest of this interview. DV1 are releasing Manufacturing Dissent, which actually, oddly enough, was the name of a beautiful section in the Sydney Underground Film Festival as well. But this is the Debbie Melnick documentary in which she investigates Mike Moore. Now, listen, it's not shooting the messenger. I've still got a lot of great faith in Mike Moore. There's just little moments where, you know, all of us need to be checked on. And I really endorse Sicko, Miss Death. Do you think Sicko is a good film? I think it's a remarkable film.
Well, I think it's pertinent to us as well because if we let what's happening happen, then we're going to have the same health system, which is no health system.
I love that. If we let what's happening happen, let's go.
Nader is a friend of his. Michael Moore innately believes in three parties. America needs to get three parties, and by sort of just following Nader for one term and then going, okay, bye, we really need the Democrats. You know, this is a long-term, I think, a long-term solution of getting a third party, a Green Party, whether it be Ralph Nader or someone else running the Green Party. And I think to just let that go and sort of do think short-term of, no, we need to get Bush out of office, you know, quite frankly, I mean, George Bush is bad, but the Democrats are just as corporate-minded and just as rich as the Republicans. So I just think, you know, he should have continued to back Nader.
We saw a preview just recently for Sicko, and it really touched us because our health system is going that way. We've been pushed for basically the last 15 years in media to augment our public health cover with private cover. Mm-hmm. And I feel we're very close to going that same system, and it's quite frightening. Now, in Sicko, he does deliver some very interesting messages. But after watching your documentary, it's become hard for me to believe things that quite possibly could be facts in his film.
I know. It actually became hard for me, too, because I saw it and I thought I'd just go and enjoy the films just for entertainment or whatever. But I was analyzing everything. And the part I found most interesting was at the beginning when he talks about the insurance people and how they're being bought off and bribed in order to deny people coverage, either from with insurance or just deny them any operations, which is disgusting. And I was really surprised by that. I had no idea that was going on. So that part I found interesting. But then I thought, oh, here we go back with Canada. And there's only a 45-minute wait time in the emergency room, which is totally wrong. It's 6 hours plus sometimes a day if you're in Montreal. And so, again, he gets it a bit wrong. And then he goes to Cuba. And I've been to Cuba. And I thought, and I've been to the pharmacies in Cuba. And quite frankly, they're not well stocked on anything. I just wanted to go get bandages, and I couldn't get that. You know what I mean? So I thought, here we go again, where he's saying, oh, yeah, Cuba's better than America. And I thought, the thing about Cuba is, yeah, they have great doctors there. But the problem is, and this is a problem because of the Americans and their economic sanctions, they don't have any of the actual medicines they
need. Because they've had embargoes on them for over 4 decades.
Absolutely.
And can you buy a Ventolin inhaler for 5 cents in Cuba?
Yeah.
That sounded pretty...
That I know, and I'd actually heard that the hospital that they went to was for foreigners and dignitaries, so that it was actually not the typical Cuban hospital that the Cubans would go to, and that it would be a bit more expensive than the 5 cents,
Now, there's some interesting extras on your DVD, Manufacturing Dissent, and one of those extras is all about Michael as a Cub Scout.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because that just struck a coin with me. This is really part of his psychopathology.
I know. And, you know, we had it in there, and it was a very long version at first. We had, I think, a 3-hour and 45-minute rub cut. We just thought, oh, my God. But then, quite frankly, it was just... When I heard these stories about him as a Cub Scout, and, okay, to be a Cub Scout and to get these merit badges, you're supposed to do good, and he's out there and he's going for a merit badge on survival. But instead of actually doing survival, he cheats it a bit by going out into the woods. He knows where he's going to spend the weekend and digs up little areas where he can plant Twinkies and all these little junk candy foods and so that he can actually survive for the weekend without having to survive off the berries or whatever the Eagle Scout's supposed to do, the Cub Scout's supposed to do. And I just thought, you're cheating it back then at age 12. And yeah, to me, doesn't this show a bit of where the person goes later on in life? You know, and it is representative, I think.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you, do you think, and it's, you've got it in your own documentary, do you think that a problem occurs when that documentarian's face is in front of the camera and it's based around their character as much as the subject matter in their documentary?
Yeah. I think there is a problem, and I actually don't like first-person documentaries that much. And we were, again, struggling with this, like, okay, we're going to do a straightforward biography. But when all these things started happening behind the scenes, Rick said, you know, I think we're going to have to start to film everything, including you. I don't really like that much. I'm not comfortable being in front. But I prefer observational documentaries, actually. Mm. Although I have to say, you know, Nick Broomfield's in front of the camera, and kind of like his docs, but
he's a bit foot in the door, Nick.
Yeah,
he's a bit like an insurance salesman gone wrong at times.
I know. You know? Yeah, and I think what I like about what he does is he shows all the problems that go along the way, you know. Or
and his own psychopathology is very upfront,
right,
and
yes,
real. So you can just, your criticism's open there. Some of the criticism I've been reading on the net about your film is basically when you actually get the opportunity to assert yourself with Mike Moore, you could have gone further.
Yeah.
But it's a difficult thing, and you just explained part of that before, that it was not something you're comfortable with, being in front of that camera. How do you cope with criticism like that? How do you see that?
I know, and I know that people said, we wanted you to be more like 60 Minutes, more like, and Michael, what about this, what about that? Mm. And that isn't my personality, really. And also, the other thing I keep thinking is, I thought, if I do that approach, that really aggressive approach, it's definitely going to turn him off. And I was ever living in hope that maybe after he'd finished, you know, doing the promotion for Fahrenheit 9/11, he would come around and actually have a few, you know, like a half an hour, 45 minutes to do something. So I thought, if I'm aggressive, he's definitely not going to do that. So I kept thinking, just play it nice and easy, and, you know, maybe he'll
just
come around.
Just be a nice Canadian.
Yeah,
And it'll all sort itself out.
Exactly, yeah.
Now, you had a few strange moments. There's a little piece here on Fox News, the live desk. Can you tell us what happened there?
Oh, yeah. That was
fascinating.
It was totally fascinating. We had never been on Fox News before, but when we were playing, it premiered the very first time at South by Southwest Film Festival in Austin, and a lot of different press was saying, we want to interview you, and Fox, there were three different Fox stations just pummeling us, and we said, no, we're not going to do Fox right off the bat because we know what they're like. And I thought, I don't want to be used as the sort of, oh, look, they're the poster kids for the new conservatives, and yeah, they've seen the light, hallelujah, they've converted, because no, we haven't. And so we thought, we'll do all the other stations, and then we thought, if we do Fox, we finally said yes, but we're going to do a live show, because we know how they edit. And so we knew that we'd have a certain amount of time, but not much. And so every time I would answer a question, then Rick would say, well, you know, yeah, you know, Michael Moore does these things, but Fox, you have to, it's disingenuous for you to say that you don't do the same things and you lie to the public. You're an international news agency that lies, and you don't talk about the 65,000 dead Iraqis, and you don't talk about that George Bush lied to the public to get him to go to a war. And then all of a sudden, you know, we hear them say, okay, get them off the air. And then the woman said, yeah, thank you very much for joining us. And it went from a 5-minute interview to a 2-minute interview.
Sick all over?
The Naked City.
The Naked City.
Well, how would you feel?
You say, what is it? Well, it's The Naked City, of course, sponsored by Sydney Film School. Come on, challenge the status quo, people. SydneyFilmSchool.com.
Come on, right now. Tony, can you hear us?
I can. I'm going to step outside where it's a little quieter.
Okay, you do that. You're up at a trade show up in Brisbane.
I'm in Gold Coast at the AMAX show.
Oh, fantastic. Now, you're out in Australia playing at the Basement on Wednesday night and also doing a Hammond B3 workshop at Carlingford Music on the Thursday.
What, are they making them?
That is correct.
Mm-hmm.
Making Hammond Bs?
No, they distribute them out here.
Play them.
They
are you going to be playing them at the workshop? What are they going to do at the workshop?
Playing Hammond B3.
There's two people here.
There's three people.
Here.
Okay. There's three people.
I'll introduce you to everyone. Tony, we've got Miss Death.
Hi,
we've
Tony.
We've got Jay Katz and myself, Coffin Ed. You're on The Naked City. Set it up for
there. I think Tony's actually caught up with a couple of people. Tony, you there, baby?
I am here, and I'm a little confused because it's noisy in here, and I hear a bunch of different voices. Am I live on the air?
Yeah, you are live on the air.
Hey, everybody, I am here.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, Tony,
we've got a live one.
You're rated up there amongst the top five Hammond B3 players in the world in the Downbeat and Jazz Times polls.
Yes.
You started playing piano accordion, I believe, when you were about 8 years old.
That was it. I got introduced to music by, I believe this is a really funny story. I got introduced to music by a door-to-door accordion lesson salesman.
Really?
My God, it wasn't Aldous Huxley, was it? Captain Beefheart?
You know, man, it's funny how from the accordion I got turned on to a Jimmy Smith record, see? Right. And that's when my whole life changed.
You're only 12 then, apparently.
I was 12, yeah. And a friend of my father's who was in a little combo band gave me a Jimmy Smith record, and I went up in my bedroom and I put that record on, and I knew right then and there that I was going to be a jazz artist.
Tony, can you remember the name of that album, one particular album?
Jimmy Smith's Greatest Hits, and the tune was The Sermon.
Wow.
And Jimmy Smith actually became your mentor, Tony.
He sure did.
Yeah, yeah.
Still is my mentor.
How did that happen?
He's dead, isn't he?
He's passed away, yeah. but you know, we got all those records. There's plenty of stuff to learn, you know? Mm.
You actually got a phone call from him on your birthday, didn't you?
It was really coincidental. Yeah. And I was 16, and I'd been sending him cassette tapes of me playing his stuff on this accordion, see? And he called me and he said, "You play too many notes. You got to learn how to play the right chords," you know?
She wins.
And you know, that's the lesson we take every day as a musician, because really it's all about, and what he was really saying was learn the tonal centers, learn the foundation, man. Then the notes will come, because then you got the right, you know, the right chord changes and the right tonal centers, and you know, the notes are going to follow. And you know, so now I appreciate that lesson actually more every day than I even knew what he was saying at the time, you know.
When did you actually get your own Hammond B3 or start playing on the classic Hammond B3 instrument? How old were you?
Well, I was exactly 16, because yeah. I was suffering from a disease similar to polio, where I'd lost some nerves and muscles in my shoulders, and so the straps of the accordion were hurting me. And I went into the hospital to get some tests, and when I came out of the hospital, my dad had a B3 in the living room, you know.
Really? Fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't turn that thing off for probably 3 or 4 years, you know. Yeah.
What is it about the Hammond B3 that makes it such a unique instrument? I mean, it's like a kind of a beast, isn't it? You really have
it's
to kind
orchestra.
Of tame it.
Yeah. It's an orchestra. And, you know, people think that just because they can play the piano, that they can play the organ. And they're two different schools. It's like a lifelong study. And you've really got to understand that with the organ, you have not only the power of, you know, the electronics, but you have so many different combinations of sounds that you could play, from infinitely soft to, you know, ear-shattering loud, and anywhere in between. And that's what's beautiful about the organ, is once it connects to your soul and you connect to it, you can just about do anything with it.
When did the Hammond B3 actually come into to play in America? When
the actual first B3 rolled off the assemblies in 1955. But before that, there was the B2 and then the BV and then the BC. So it was a progression. It started with the Model A. And then the B3 came out, and it ran from 1955 all the way to 1976, and then that was the end. Until Hammond Suzuki came out with the new digital B3, which I'll be playing at the gig at the basement.
Because you need about 4 people to move one of the originals, don't you?
Just about. You know, I have dollies at home, so...
Yeah,
and I have a trailer.
We don't want to
know
about your personal life, thank you.
Miss Death, calm down. Now, listen, do you need the original B3s? It's Jay Katz here, Tony. Do you need to get those classic orbital speakers? You know, the ones that actually oscillate, the Leslies? Yeah.
The Leslie speaker. As a matter of fact, I'm friends with Jim Leslie, who is the son, and I did know Don Leslie, the inventor.
Because those speakers seem to work in tandem with it. I mean, in many ways, the Hammond B3 sound is just emphasized through the use of the Leslie.
Right. The Leslie speaker, you know, there are organists like Brian Auger today. He does not use one. But 99% of the organ players use a Leslie. And actually, the Leslie speaker was invented by Don Leslie to try to do the same thing that Lawrence Hammond was doing with the chorus generator in the organ, was to create the effects that you get when you play the pipe organ. None of this stuff was invented for what I do.
Right.
And it just so happened that the Leslie speaker connected to the B3 became the standard for rock players, for jazz players, for blues players. And so today you say Hammond, you say Leslie, and fortunately the Leslie name has also been purchased, and they're remanufacturing it by the Hammond Suzuki Company. See?
Fantastic. One of the things that has always touched me about that sound is that I'm able to get people decades later, up on a dance floor. We run a little go-go club in Sydney called The Sounds of Seduction. And, you know, some of the music we play is the old KBM stock music library. I wonder if you're aware of their 60s period and artists like Hawksworth and Hawkshaw. You remember that album, The Hawk? Great tunes that they did. And they were actually taken by Lee Scratch Perry at one stage, went across to Jamaica and created a other world of Hammond B sounds on the Palmer label.
Exactly.
Yeah, do you like that stuff? Do you collect that stuff as well?
I collect anything. As a matter of fact, I'll listen to anything from, I hope I'm not being, but this is their truth. I'll listen to anything from country music to classical music because there's something to learn from music itself, you know?
Oh, exactly.
And as an organ player, having the strength of and the ability to orchestrate the way you can, when you hear country music today, I mean, it's driven by organ.
Yeah.
When you heard all the rock classics, you know, like Yes and Rick Wakeman and Bachman Turnover, man, that was all driven by the organ.
Yeah. Well, any good recording studio in the world today has a Hammond B3 sitting there, doesn't it?
That is correct.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. It's not a studio unless it has one, really.
Right.
For me, anyhow.
I just love the approach over there in Jamaica, though. Jackie Mattu, I mean, what an organist that guy was.
Unbelievable.
Mm. Yeah.
Right, and what can people expect on Wednesday night down at the basement, Tony?
I'm going to give them all I got.
Yeah.
I'm going to blow their freaking minds.
Oh, man. Oh, that's so exciting.
You love to pull out those really kind of heavy chords, those real big organ chops, don't you?
Well, you know, when somebody talks to you and they whisper, and then all of a sudden they yell at you, you hear what they yell.
Yeah.
And see, that's what we call the shout chorus, you shout it out, that's come from the gospel.
Yeah,
man.
Right.
That shout chorus gets everybody's attention, pulls them off their seat.
Yeah.
I think that's what a Hammond B3 always did to me. It sounded like the most organic of all instruments. It sounded like it was just an attachment to your body if you were playing it properly. Now, you know, back in the 60s, I guess it was Booker T and the MGs in many ways that sold that notion and that sound, that beat, that freak beat sound to the public. Do you keep going back to that time for inspiration?
Well, you know what? When you listen to all the jam bands today, like the Martin Modeskis and the Soul Lives and a lot of these jam bands, man, it's just a recreation of the funk of the 60s. You know it is.
Yeah. Well, I'd just like to say to Tony, from myself and my wife, Miss Death here, who's knitting listening to you, it is an absolute joy to do an interview with someone so passionate about what they're doing, and we just wish all power to you, Tony. Forward.
Oh, God bless you guys.
Yeah, what he
thanks
said.
For the opportunity. Yeah, thank you very much.
And we're going to go out with...
I wrote a song that I'm going to sing for your wife, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
Go for it.
It's called Love, baby.
I tell you what, we will be there moshing in the basement, swinging from the chandeliers onto you.
Oh, we're going to have a party, man.
Oh, yeah. Looking forward to it.
Thanks for the opportunity to let me speak to the people of Sydney.
Yes, now look, we've dragged out the couch here for a bit of couch potato content.
We've also got Christian, our producer here, who's looking like he's swallowed three bottles of Lagaxil. Are you all right?
I've had a pretty crazy week.
Yeah, you've got to behave yourself.
Yeah,
out
you've
got
to start getting to bed earlier, boy.
Yeah. Man, there's too much going on in this great city.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right.
There's too much going on in every great city,
let me just give you a piece of advice. It's fine now, okay?
Wait till you're our age.
But everything that you do will come back to bite you on the bum later on.
I don't know.
I'm telling you now. My mum used to tell me that, and I used to think, Ma, you don't know what
you're
talking about.
I don't know. I reckon I go to the Lansdowne on a Friday night, you know, see the Pink Fits, and there's guys twice my age, and they're still going crazy. So, you know, more power to them, and I want to be one of those
crazy
guys.
Crazy in inverted commas, okay? Yeah.
And they're probably all in casualty at the moment. But anyway, what have you got
shout
there?
Shout out to anyone who heard Birdman last night. But anyway.
Umbrella have released a 5-disc set,
I'm
volume one of Pee Wee's Playhouse.
Oh, now, what an amazing show.
Pee Wee Herman, he was a groundbreaking artiste on television during the 1980s.
And in the cinema.
Yeah, and in the cinema. Of course, Paul Rubens, the real life persona of Pee Wee Herman. I guess he kind of ran foul of the law a little later on. We won't go into that.
No, because, best not to.
It no
besmirches
reason to.
A particularly fine career. I mean, the guy was a genius,
he was,
really.
Absolutely. He was. Mm. He probably and still, you know, is, but nobody's going to give
Pee-wee's
him a chance.
Pee-wee's Playhouse, I've actually given copies of that to kiddies over the years, and children just love that show. It's just incredible.
So do adults. Mm.
It's amazing, it's awesome. Because it's all pre-computerised stuff, isn't it? It's
well,
all
totally.
Like stop animation and animatronics and stuff like that.
Blackula appears in it, doing the old
William
cartoons.
Marshall. Yeah. Yep. He's what is he? King of what?
King of crap. I don't know, but he appears in
don't
there.
Don't say things like that on the radio. That's outrageous.
Crap's nothing, baby. Take it easy.
Anyway, you really appreciate this when you see it on DVD because it brings up the just the look of the place. You know, the playhouse, the sets, and everything like that.
Yep.
It's just really enriched. And Pee Wee Herman himself was had such an incredible head, didn't he, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. And voice.
Yeah, and voice,
everything
yeah.
about him, his whole style. It's pretty
and
awesome.
And the early Pee-wee playhouses were pretty sort of, there wasn't much, there was a tiny little bit of innuendo in them. But, of course, Pee-wee later on in his films and that, he sort of pushed the envelope.
The innuendo got rather large.
When he had the little mirrors on the front of his shoes, remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
That was
upskirt,
a bit much.
Upskirt stuff. Let's not go there.
And of course, quite a collection of well-known actors. Lawrence Fishburne.
Yeah, that's right. He was
one of
there.
The actors in the early Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Now we must tell people that that's the first season. It's not the second season.
It
it's
is
just the entire
yes.
first season.
Volume
five
one,
discs
five
of it.
Disc set. I mean, look, absolutely fantastic. And
I've recently bought a whole bunch of old pulpy sci-fi paperbacks, and I reckon I'm going to go through one a week. So the first one I read was something called The Mind Cage by A. Van Vogt. This is about 150 pages and, you know, just insane happenings on every page. There's a guy in a totalitarian dictatorship who switches minds with the scientists, but oh no, there's beast men and evil, you know, princesses who want him to dominate them and...
Sounds like APEC to me.
Pretty much. And brains that are computers and bizarre generals. These things are great. You just, you know, pick up a bunch of them, read them in a snap as you're on the bus. So it was great.
Yeah, it's very refreshing you actually go out there and pick up so much literature.
You know,
I think it's fantastic.
Just, you know, Sappho books. And look, I've read the serious stuff. But sometimes you just need, like, a guy shooting a gas gun and a beast man and bizarre geopolitical situations involving a fusion of capitalism and communism. It's great.
Like APEC to me.
Once again, I also got down to the opening of the Sydney Underground Film Festival. It was great, guys. You know,
did a wonderful job, didn't they?
They did.
And it's
Stefan and Catherine.
Great, just a great community. It's everyone who's been in the Naked City, everyone I see out, just all gathering together some good films. You know, a bit of hit and miss. You know, some pretty cheesy horror, some really amazing, amazing experimental shorts.
Well, I think the Underground Film Festival has to have room for everyone.
Oh, I'm not complaining.
No,
I mean,
no,
that's
no.
The idea of a film festival. Some
Absolutely.
Stuff's going to be a hit, some stuff's going to be a miss. But you're never going to forget seeing a, you know, guy masturbating and leaving his droppings on. You know, and
so we weren't going to talk about Pee Wee Herman.
And some culture, and some amazing, amazing culture jam and remixes and such.
Fantastic.
The last night there, they showed one. It was, I think it was called Erection, and it was just a side-on view of this guy. I think it ran for about 15 minutes.
That's my friend's...
Yeah, let's not go there.
Have you seen that film, have you?
No, yeah. But I've heard about it.
Thank God it wasn't the length of War and Peace.
I tell you what, it was like
Russian
watching
one.
Grass grow. Can you imagine? It's just like it's a profile look of his
appendage
going from the flaccid to the erect.
Why are women the only one who get to...
It took 15 bloody minutes, I mean.
Do wanky films about their bodies and their love of
that must
their
have been.
Body.
He must have been so unaroused if
what
it took that?
That
long.
Yeah.
Sorry?
What is that?
Well, I'll tell you what, I went out and had three rum and cokes while it was on. I came back and it was still bloody flaccid.
That's the sort of thing that gives experimental filmmaking a bad name. That's what sort of the conservatives think when they hear experimental
But no,
film.
Look...
One of the biggest problems here, though, Coffin, and you've done it, you've overstepped the line there, is actually talking about your own physicality and not the film subject matter. Yeah, three rum and cokes is not going to help you get that thing up, really, is
absolutely
it?
Absolutely not.
It's going to take it down every time.
The chances of meeting a dinosaur in today's world are very slim.
The Naked City.
This monster is venereal disease.
Wake up, humanity. Don't you know where you are? You're walking the streets of the Naked City, and we're proudly brought to you by Sydney Film School, a community of artist filmmakers and a production house for high-quality films and documentaries. Get your creative rushes now. SydneyFilmSchool.com.